This is an iHeart podcast.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
From Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries, this is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday. And yes, I am here. We have, well, I wouldn't bank on any politics this hour. I just did a lot of politics. I will probably get back to that maybe next hour. I think so. I'm almost positive I will next hour. I am almost positive. I promise that I might. But here's what we have on tap this hour. We're going to do some Medal of Honor Monday. I actually might do a teensy bit of history around the Medal of Honor Monday, but that's not what history is going to be on. We're going to do some history this hour, and it's going to come back to today, some lessons about today, our political battles. I think it might maybe give you a little bit of hope. Maybe lay out kind of a general plan just on a battle of old, kind of do a lessons from history type deal. But that's not what time it is right now. Right now it's time for Medal of Honor Monday, as it always is. Every single Monday, start of the second hour, we do the exact same thing. Take a Medal of Honor citation, we read it. And I want to encourage you, if you have ones you love, or ones that are special to you for one reason or another, maybe a family member, a neighbor, knew a guy who knew a guy, anything like that, email them in. Just one you're a fan of, email it in. We have a stack of recommendations, so it may be a while before you hear yours. That's just kind of the way it goes now, but we love that too. We love a little personal touch on this one, like this one. This one says, hi, Jesse, Chris, and Michael. See, this guy emailed this one back in March, and we still had Michael. Now Michael's gone. Chris, we should just cross out his name like he's gone forever. What, Chris? It's fine. Anyway, he said, could you read the Medal of Honor citation for a PFC Martin May? His wife was a close friend of my family, and he was one of my first heroes. Also, my girlfriend and I really enjoyed meeting you at the Harrisburg book signing last summer. His name is Ben. Ben, best to you, best to your lady. And without further ado, let's do a Medal of Honor citation for a Mr. Martin O. May.
Ready, aim,
fire. Honoring those who went above and beyond, it's Medal of Honor Monday.
He gallantly maintained a 3-day stand in the face of terrible odds when American troops fought for possession of rugged slopes of Legasuku-yama on Lashima, Ryukyu Islands. After placing After placing his heavy machine gun in an advantageous yet vulnerable position on a ridge to support riflemen, he became the target of fierce mortar and small arms fire from the counter-attacking Japanese. He repulsed this assault by sweeping the enemy with accurate bursts, while explosions and ricocheting bullets threw blinding dust and dirt all around him. He broke up a second counterattack by hurling grenades into the midst of the enemy forces and then refused to withdraw, volunteering to maintain his post and cover the movement of American riflemen as they reorganized to meet any further hostile action. The major effort of the enemy did not develop until the morning of the 21st of April. It found PFC May still supporting the rifle company in the face of devastating rifle, machine gun, and mortar fire. While many of the friendly troops around him became casualties, he continued to fire his machine gun until he was severely wounded and his gun rendered useless by a burst of a mortar shell. Refusing to withdraw from the violent action, He blasted fanatical Japanese troops with hand grenades until wounded again, this time mortally. By his intrepidity and the extreme tenacity with which he held firm until death against overwhelming forces, PFC May killed at least 16 Japanese, was largely responsible for maintaining the American lines, and inspired his comrades to efforts which later resulted in complete victory and seizure of the mountain stronghold. And he died the next day. So I just wanted to touch on a couple things there. This area of fighting, the Okinawa area, was just incredibly terrible. And one of the reasons it was so awful was it was so late in the war. This was April of 1945 when this took place. And the reason the date matters is, remember, the Japanese, you know, the enemy, whoever he happens to be, in this case it was the Japanese, they're human beings, flesh and blood too, and they learn too. And they learned throughout our battles in the Pacific, they learned what we like to do, they learned what worked for them, what didn't work for them. And Okinawa, because of its proximity to Japan, it's right there, they understood that Okinawa was really... it was really the final chance. If they lost Okinawa, all of Japan was going to be within easy range of our bombers and their fighter escorts, and we were simply going to pound Japan into dust, which we did. We just pounded it we heavy bombed it into dust, and they knew those were the stakes. And they had learned throughout the Pacific that trying to stop us from reaching the shore was completely futile. You can't fortify every inch of shoreline, and no matter how hard you fortify a shoreline, we are going to bludgeon you with enough naval gunfire, air power. We're going to bludgeon you with enough stuff. We are getting ashore. You can make us pay a price to get ashore, but we are going to get ashore. In the Okinawa campaign, they mastered forget about the shore. And forget about these stupid bonsai charges, which they were doing throughout the war. It doesn't do you any good to put your men in an impossible situation and have them charge a machine gun nest like it's World War I. That's idiotic. It may sound honorable to die for the emperor that way, but it doesn't help the cause. So let's stop doing that. No more bonsai charges. No more stopping them right at the shore. Let's find the most defensible place, wherever that happens to be on the island, and let's put all of our resources into fortifying that place, and let's make them die at that place trying to take it back. It's what they did in Iwo Jima. You've seen, if you haven't ever seen a picture of Iwo Jima, you'll see the one major landmark there is Mount Suribachi. It's a big black island, black volcanic ash, and then there's this huge, looks like a big mound. And the Japanese, they didn't bother. I mean, they had their weapons trained on the shoreline to try to kill as many as possible, but they didn't try to keep us from landing. They turned that thing into a fort. They did the same thing in the Okinawa campaign. Well, with a heavy machine gun, and I was part of weapons platoon, but I was not a heavy machine gunner. I was a mortarman. But we all learned and we all knew heavy machine gunners die fast in combat. They die fast for obvious reasons. If you're taking fire from one, then you are going to want to take that thing out. It's pouring the largest amount of deadly lead downrange. So if my platoon is assaulting an area and there's a heavy machine gun anywhere, whatever we have to do to stop that gun from chewing us up, that's what we'll do. To maintain your heavy machine gun for 3 days with the Japanese coming at you again and again and again. And that's why they eventually got him, because you would have to take it out. And he would know that. He would know they would have to come back again and again until he was dead. You're not going to live through that forever. It really is awesome. And these guys, you've heard me praise these guys before. It's just, for me, it's the ultimate act of bravery, the ultimate sacrifice to say, no, I'll hold the line and I'll die so you guys can live. You guys reorganize yourselves, get ready. I'll stay here and die for you. That's really awesome, man. It's really awesome. And these guys are amazing. All right. But that is it for World War II talk, because it is time to rewind a couple thousand years, actually more than a couple thousand years. You want to do some ancient history? That's next.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday, on a Labor Day, and we are getting ready to do some history. So I told you I was gone all weekend. We had taken my dad to Florida to celebrate a big birthday celebration, celebrating his life and 70 years and all that. So everyone's traveling back today. My in-laws, my parents, my sister, everyone traveled back today. I traveled back today, too. I just got off a plane a couple hours ago. And I don't know what it is with women. When they're traveling, if you're on a group text, which there's nothing worse than a group text anyway, they update you on everything. Chris is laughing because you know I'm right. You know I'm right. Chris, I'm not kidding. I have had updates all day long of, hey, we just landed here. Day, we've got a long layover. Hey, I'm not even kidding, Chris. I kid you not. The last one I got a heads up that we landed, and now we're waiting for our bags, and I got a picture of them waiting for the bags. And so I had to return fire, Chris. I had to return fire. I texted back just a couple minutes ago. I said, I just ate a cheesesteak. I'm doing my show. I just wanted to see how it lands. What, Chris? If we're gonna do that, you know what? I'm gonna text him right now while we're on the air before we do history here. Hold on. Just use the restroom. All right, quit. Now let's do some history, shall we? We're going to talk about the Battle of Actium. How much do you know about the Battle of Actium? Ever heard of it before? History buffs will know, especially Roman history buffs. But this is one of those battles and the history behind it, what happened before it, what happened after it. One of those things that really changed a lot of the world. So I have to do a couple things to set this battle up. Before we do that, this is going to be a lesson. It's going to be a lesson about choosing your battleground, choosing your battles, about being patient when you're not quite ready, when you have the upper hand, being aggressive, not being patient, taking what you can get. And more than anything, probably, it's going to be a lesson about momentum, all right? Momentum. Before we get to the Battle of Actium, I do have to give you a little bit of a backstory to where we are. First, we're in ancient Rome, all right? Ancient Rome. And Julius Caesar was not part of the Battle of Actium, but I can't tell you the story of the Battle of Actium without talking a little bit about what happened with Julius Caesar and the why and the players. I'm not going to give you too many dates, because I don't do that. It ruins the story. I'm not going to give you too many names. If the name is not absolutely necessary, I'm not going to give it to you, but these are probably going to be the only names you are going to need to know for the story today. Julius Caesar, you know who he was. Mark Antony, hopefully you know who he was. If you don't, you will know after today. Don't worry. Cleopatra, I know you've heard of Cleopatra. You might not know some things about Cleopatra. So Cleopatra, all right? Julius Caesar, Mark Antony, Cleopatra, and Agrippa. That's a name that is not commonly known, Agrippa. So that's only four names, right? That's all I'm going to give it to you. When was all this? Just think about Jesus, about the time Jesus was born, roughly that time. That's not exact. This is actually a little bit before he was born, but this is Jesus is about to be born. All right? Sorry, Chris. Anyway, let's do a little rewind. First, Julius Caesar. This is going to matter. Julius Caesar was, by this point, I'm not going to go into, it's not a Caesar story, but he was a general. He was fighting in Gaul. He had a cousin. It was a third cousin, but we're not going to major on the minor here. A cousin by the name of Mark Antony. Mark Antony was a very, very, very capable commander. How do I know that? Because Julius Caesar, honestly, the dude is so amazing. He might be the best general who ever lived. On top of everything else he did, he really might be. I'm not saying he is, and you can argue about that. Oh, I'll have 1,000 emails from you history buffs arguing with me, and that's fine. You're probably right, but he's on everyone's short list. The dude was amazing. And Julius Caesar, during one of the most important battles of his life, put Mark Antony in charge of the most important place in that most important battle. All right, but before we get to that battle, I want to do just a little bit of background. So Julius Caesar, he's a general, he's a powerful guy. Julius Caesar, he has a relative. Again, I'm not going to go into all the details of it. I don't think I mentioned the main guy in the story. Five names, Octavian. You're going to need to know the name. Julius Caesar, Mark Antony, Cleopatra, Octavian, and Agrippa. That's it. It's five names, right? That's it. Five names. So Julius Caesar has a relative by the name of Octavian. He's much, much younger. He's a child. He's a teenager at this time. Julius Caesar is impressed with this young man. Exactly what impressed him, we'll never know, but judging by how Octavian turned out, it's not hard to see why Julius Caesar would be impressed by his intellect, his cunning, his general ability. How impressed was Julius Caesar by this man? Julius Caesar made him his adopted son. Yeah. But let's go to Egypt. Let's first go to Egypt. You see, Caesar was in a war. He was in a war with Pompey Magnus. Pompey Magnus was another great Roman general. And Julius Caesar had defeated Pompey Magnus in battle. And he had Pompey Magnus on the run. Pompey Magnus, on the run, went to the Egyptians for shelter. And that's kind of where our story is going to begin. Hang on.
Truth. Attitude. Jesse Kelly.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
It's almost a dirty word, one that connotes conspiracy theory.
Will we ever get the truth about the Benghazi massacre?
Bad faith political warfare, and frankly, bullshit.
We kill the ambassador just to cover something up. You put two and two together.
Was it an overblown distraction or a sinister conspiracy?
Benghazi is a Rosetta Stone for everything that's been going on for the last 20 years.
I'm Leon Nafok from Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries. This is Fiasco, Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Yeah, that's right. Lock her up.
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a Monday, a Labor Day, where we have driven the show straight off a cliff and we are now doing history. And in case you're just now joining us, we're just getting revved up on history. So don't worry. All you need to know right now is Julius Caesar. No, this is not a story about Julius Caesar. It's a story about the Battle of Actium. But Julius Caesar has just defeated his Roman counterpart, the Roman general who was against him. The guy's name was Pompey Magnus, but that doesn't matter for our time, for our purposes here. Pompey Magnus was still alive, though, when Pompey Magnus was on the run. Where do you go if you're Pompey Magnus? This is going to play an important part in our story. Pompey Magnus ran to Egypt. Why would you run to Egypt? What's the point of Egypt? Who cares about Egypt? Well, Egypt has the longest most fascinating history of any country on the planet. Is that fair? Chris, is that fair? Maybe China could make a play for that. It would be China or Egypt, in my opinion, as far as the length of history. Well, there's a reason for that. Egypt is a central hub for a lot of things. Egypt is also insanely fertile and insanely profitable. And Egypt, it wasn't officially the Roman Empire at this time, but they were very much a client state of the Roman Empire. Now, what does that mean? This is going to be important for our purposes. Rome, they had different ways of conquering a people or colonizing a people. Nothing was universal when it came to the Romans. Sometimes, to use a very extreme example, sometimes the Romans would handle conquests like they handled Carthage, where they simply killed everyone. They killed everyone, they burned down the whole city, and they vaporized your civilization. The Romans would do that. And then they weren't married to that. They had other ways. They had places like Egypt where, hey, look, we the Romans, we're going to be in charge, but we want you to be able to have your king or queen or whatever you want. That's fine. You know what? You can have your religion, whatever you want. That's fine. We are going to need however much grain we demand. When we need troops, you're going to send those. When we need things, you're going to send those. But on the flip side, you will also be protected by Rome. You know, this is very similar. It's funny because we're talking about Italy, really, but it's very similar to how the mafia operates. You know, protection, a protection racket, where if you own a movie theater and I'm in the mob, yeah, you will pay me. You're going to pay me for however many seats you have in the movie theater. But at the same time, I actually do provide you protection. If you have an employee who's stealing money from the cash register, you don't have to call the cops. You call me and I will handle the problem for you. So that worked the same way back in Rome when it came to these client states. Okay, so that's what Egypt was at this time. In Egypt, at this time, when Pompey Magnus was running there, running from Julius Caesar, it was ruled by the Ptolemies. Don't worry about remembering that name, but it was ruled by the Ptolemies. Ptolemy was one of Alexander the Great's generals, and his generations after him had still ruled Egypt. There were Greeks ruling Egypt, and the Ptolemies were ruling Egypt at the time. Pompey Magnus gets to Egypt and says, oh, nice, I'm here. Egypt has loads of money, loads of it. They have loads of people. They have loads of resources. Egypt, honestly, they're super powerful. They're just still underneath Rome. But Pompey Magnus is there to refit, rest. They have the money to raise an army. They have the people. Pompey thinks he's going to have a safe haven in Egypt. Pompey was, however, wrong, because the Battle of Actium, which we are talking about tonight, maybe more than anything else, is a story of treachery, backstabbing, momentum. Momentum's really going to be a central theme. The Ptolemies, who were ruling Egypt, underneath the Romans, of course, at this time, they saw Pompey Magnus land on the shore. And they thought to themselves, well, this isn't really a Roman. He's a defeated Roman. Julius Caesar is going to be the clear winner in this war, meaning Julius Caesar is going to be calling the shots in Rome. And we want to be on Julius Caesar's good side. So instead of taking in Pompey Magnus and providing him help and shelter and resources, they stabbed him to death right on the beach. They just murdered him right there. And then they chopped his friggin' head off, and they made two terrible mistakes. They chopped his head off, and then they bragged to Caesar about it. Caesar shows up in Egypt in pursuit of Pompey Magnus. And yes, they were enemies when they fought, but Caesar had a long history with Pompey, which I won't go into, but they had a long history of working together, of being friends, of friendly. And Caesar did not take kindly at all to the Ptolemies killing a Roman, killing a friend, and then bragging to him about it. So what Caesar did, and this will come into play for our story, is he removed the Ptolemies from power and he placed, well, really a different Ptolemy on the throne, and her name was Cleopatra. Cleopatra was famously a very savvy political operator. She had been in a huge fight with her siblings. It was a long story I won't go into right now, but Caesar said, this woman here, she's now in power. And then famously, they began a love affair. A love affair that produced a child. And that is also going to matter for our story. By the time Julius Caesar leaves Egypt, Cleopatra is on the throne and she is the queen of Egypt. She is the ruler of Egypt. She is worshipped there. She's under Julius Caesar. Chris, be appropriate. I mean, politically, she's under Julius Caesar, but she's still the queen of Egypt, okay? Now, Julius Caesar goes back to Rome. You know how the story goes from there. Julius Caesar is ruling Rome. He is stabbed to death on the Senate floor by other senators. Now we have Mark Antony and we have Octavian. Just to recap for you, because you may not remember this, Mark Antony was the famous, very accomplished, very capable general under Julius Caesar. And we have Octavian, a much, much younger man, not at all an accomplished general, but a very savvy human being, somebody Caesar was so impressed with that he left all of his money. He left his will. He made Octavian his adopted son. He made him the heir to all of his money. And Caesar was insanely wealthy because of all of his conquests. Now you have a dead Julius Caesar. You have a Mark Antony. You have an Octavian. Well, that's going to be a problem, you see. Because there are a bunch of different things going on in Rome. And I could do a year long on all this stuff. But Mark Antony, he had control of Caesar's money, the money that was supposed to go to Octavian. And Mark Antony didn't want to give the money to Octavian. Octavian would beg, borrow, demand it. And Mark Antony kept saying, well, no, you can't have it. Now, eventually these two, they join forces to fight Caesar's assassins, and that in and of itself is a very long, complicated history, but we're going to fast forward through all that and get to the part where Octavian and Mark Antony have a very, very public, world-class falling out. They are on the outs with each other. Octavian stays in Rome. Mark Antony follows in Julius Caesar's footsteps, and he heads to Egypt, where he meets Cleopatra. And that's really where our story begins. Hang on. What, Chris? We can make jokes. It's fine.
You got that right. The Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. There's no question the who were lying about that. There's no way a deaf, dumb, and blind person could ever play pinball successfully. The whole point of the game is, what, Chris? It's not true. You need to see things and hear things. It's just no way. That's like all these people who believe Helen Keller wrote music and stuff like that. Be serious. No, she didn't. Anyway, back to our history story. Remember, you can email us, jesse@jessekellyshow.com, talking about the Battle of Actium. Julius Caesar dies, leaves his fortune to Octavian. Mark Antony won't give it to him. Mark Antony eventually takes off to Egypt. Octavian stays in Rome, and we have a situation brewing, and here is the situation. And it's long and complicated and it's horrible and wonderful, but Mark Antony walks into Egypt, and I'm telling you, Cleopatra is one of those people, one of the historical people I wish I could go back and meet. Just 10 minutes. I want to have a 10-minute conversation with Cleopatra. Why? Well, she managed to seduce Julius Caesar, one of the great men in history. And then Mark Antony, probably the most powerful man in Rome at this time after Julius Caesar died, Mark Antony walks into Egypt and she gets him too. She gets it. Look, I'm not asking for Cleopatra to bat her eyes at me, but I've got to know. Was it just beauty? What did this woman have? But Mark Antony walks into Egypt, falls in love, head over heels. Cleopatra's this powerful queen of Egypt. Mark Antony is a very powerful, very well thought of Roman general. He has legions with him. I should point out he's not over there on the run like a fugitive. He is a powerful general with Roman troops and a lot of them. And Mark Antony's troops loved him. He was famous for eating with them, sleeping where they slept, a real man of the people type general. Those types of generals endear themselves to their troops. Mark Antony was very well thought of amongst his men. And so Mark Antony is in Egypt with Cleopatra, the Egyptian queen. And they are living it up. They're partying it up Egyptian style. Mark Antony is mobilizing for military campaigns, doing things like that. But he and Cleopatra are, they're having children. Okay, so things are going well in that relationship, even though it was illicit. But things are going well. They're having children there. In the meantime, Octavian is back in Rome, and he's trying to deal with the Roman Senate. A Senate that doesn't want a ruler. They don't want Octavian to rule, but they don't want Mark Antony to rule either. So they've got to figure out something, and they end up aligning themselves with Octavian. Octavian and his general Agrippa. And what comes next is a propaganda war, the likes of which, well, you're very used to. You're alive in American politics today. You see all the lies, the manipulation, the media, how these things are fought in the public square, trying to sway public opinion. Well, it may not have been done on Facebook back then, but it was done in the exact same way. Mark Antony would have his allies in Rome spread terrible rumors about Octavian. Octavian would have his allies in Rome spread terrible rumors about Mark Antony. This is happening. He's doing this. He's doing that. And what makes the story so wild is to this day, we don't totally know which of the rumors were true because they were busy lying about each other so often. We don't know. We can just give you the generalities. And the generalities were Mark Antony was saying, I am Caesar's true champion. I am the one who stopped Caesar's assassins. Octavian is a nobody. Octavian is there saying, hey, this guy abandoned Rome. And more importantly, he abandoned Rome for some Egyptian that would have been thought of as being really beneath Romans. For a Roman man of standing to go marry any Egyptian, even a queen, would be beneath a Roman. And Mark Antony starts threatening to withhold and starts withholding vital supplies from Rome. Egypt was a breadbasket for Rome. Their grains and things like that. Rome needed these things to eat. You have a war of words. You have a war of propaganda. And eventually they realize we have to go ahead and fight. It's time to fight. Now, how and where do you handle this fight? I want you to know we're leaving Egypt for the time being because the Battle of Actium does not take place in Egypt. We're going to Greece. Don't worry about that. It's not important for our purposes, but we're going to Greece. Mark Antony and Cleopatra, they gather up their forces and they head to Greece. But what forces? What are we talking about? Well, we have Caesar's legions and we have two things that Cleopatra is bringing that are critically important. In fact, most historians believe this is the only reason she was even allowed on the military campaign. You don't bring your wife with you on a military campaign. You don't bring a woman at all, not at this time. But Cleopatra came along, and Cleopatra sat in the war council meetings. Why would a woman be allowed to do that? She brought ships, a lot of them. Egypt had a lot of ships, and she brought money. Money was a desperate need of every side back then. That's how you paid your troops to keep them in the field. Your troops didn't just stay with you because they loved that you shared some Cheez-Its with them back in Gaul one day. You had to pay them. They had to have the promise of payment of treasure. And Cleopatra brought a gigantic war chest with her. Octavian, he didn't have either of those things. He didn't have Cleopatra's navy, and he didn't have the vast wealth of Egypt at his disposal. Now, I know what you're probably thinking. He had the Roman Empire, but Rome didn't have a king or a queen, and Octavian wasn't the all-powerful ruler. He couldn't just waltz into the Roman treasury and load everything up. That's not how that worked. But he did bring down vicious taxes on the Roman people and other people to try to raise enough money to pay his army. And even then, he didn't have quite enough money to keep them paid. But it's time to have a battle. And this battle is one of the most important battles in the history of mankind, because this battle is going to determine who rules Rome now that it's no longer a republic. Is it going to be Mark Antony and his Egyptian queen? Is Rome going to be an Eastern empire based out of Europe or based out of Egypt? Or is it going to be ruled by Octavian based out of Rome? Octavian and his amazing general slash admiral Agrippa, it's time for war, they decide. So it's time to talk about it. Hang on.
When I told people I was making a podcast about Benghazi, 9 times out of 10, they called me a masochist, rolled their eyes, or just asked, why?
Benghazi, the truth became a web of lies.
From Prologue Projects and Pushkin Industries, this is Fiasco. Benghazi.
What difference at this point does it make?
Listen to Fiasco, Benghazi on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart podcast.